Rusty Simpre.
Good morning, Rick. How's it going?
Well, so far so good for me. And thanks to both gentlemen for being here. We're going to do a little auto chat or something similar. We're going to be talking about cars, questions about cars, both sort of standard for the public, and call in with your specific question about your, I don't know, your Hyundai Sonata 2009. Which is what I have, or what did I have before that? My Ford Taurus 2001.
A Jeep.
That's right. Anything that you have, call in with your question about it. And our gentleman between Steve and Rusty, what did you tell me the other day, guys? Like over 40 years of professional service as mechanics?
I've got 18 years.
I got 30 plus.
Yeah.
I lost count.
Oh, goodness. Rusty, you've been working on cars since you were 7?
Started actually when I was 12, kind of after school kind of thing with some race car stuff, but full time since 1979. So,
frightening. Just frightening. Can I just say you carry your age well?
Thank you. Sometimes.
Sometimes
I don't feel it. I mean, don't feel like I'm carrying it well, but that's normal.
What,
but
not like when you used to cartwheels through the shop?
No, I haven't done that in quite a while.
All right, our guest today again, Rusty Simpre.
I still throw things, though, across the shop. But.
Your arm is still good.
Oh, yeah.
Same distance as when you threw that wrench
and
before.
Accuracy, yes, sir.
And accuracy. So Rusty Simpre with us for the hour. Steve Bullock, both from Price Automotive, but experience with cars, both domestic and
foreign imported.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. All I could think of was European, and I'm like, well, that takes out all the Asian cars, domestic and imported. So call us up with your questions. Kristen is here to answer the phone today and patch you through. If for some reason you're concerned about people hearing your voice about my car and its car problems, we can take the call, but then that doesn't allow for follow-up questions very well. You can also send me an instant message. WNRN Studio will get you online for me to read your question. So let's fire it up. 979-0919. 877 WNRN Rocks, and I see the phones ringing already. Let me take the moment to give a shout out to the Lovingston folks on 94.7. And support today also coming from The Backyard, the university's culinary secret at the end of Elliewood Avenue. Backyard has a new spring menu, daily specials, and an ever changing list of beers on tap. Their outdoor patio is open for lunch and dinner. For more info, dial them up at 202-8215. You can find them at thebackyarduva.com. That's thebackyarduva.com or on Facebook. All right, let's see. Let's take our first call. Chris, are you with me?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right, we got Chris from Charlottesville. Your question to the boys.
I drive a 2003 Ford Focus, and recently it's been stalling out on me when a lot of the electrical components are going. So I don't tend to have any problems, but as soon as I have turn it on, then turn my radio on, my windshield wipers on, and my lights, and then my defroster goes on, it just cuts out, and I have no idea what to do about it, and it's been pretty dangerous. Any thoughts?
They still have an IEC valve on them?
I think they do, and I think it's possible that thing could have a couple different things going on. They have like a, if the throttle body on those things gets all stopped up with like carbon buildup, what it does, it makes them actually idle low. It doesn't seem like it when you're driving it. It'll seem like everything is fine.
Until you put a load on it.
Exactly.
Such as defrost cuts the compressor and the air compressor on, and that...
You're generating more and more load on the engine, and it may come down to where it's going too slow. The biggest thing is it's going to be one of these things that needs to be checked before you really get too deep into it. Guessing at it, it could even be that there is a battery problem as well. It might have a bad cell in it.
No problem starting the car? Any problem starting the car or headlights dimming or any of that?
Say that again, Chris.
It starts up just fine.
Okay.
It just cuts out a little,
I'm thinking dirty
randomly.
Throttle.
Yeah.
Dirty throttle or IEC. The idle air control valve could possibly have some carbon buildup on that as well.
Is that something that that Chris can do himself?
Yeah, it's an old famous problem with Fords. If you can get the the hose off going into the throttle and open it up and spray some carburetor cleaner on a rag and just reach in there and rub it down. We use toothbrushes, but you don't want to just like soak the whole thing down.
Right.
Just clean out. When you open that throttle up, you'll see a ring of black carbony gook in there. And you just clean that out real good, and that fixes about 80% of them.
What's the
carburetor
the standard cost? Oh, you can spray some carburetor cleaner.
Yeah, just spray some on a rag or on a toothbrush and scrub it out and wipe it out real good with the rag.
And if Chris is more like myself, and which is great fear of ruining a car even more and more damage, what's the cost of going to the shop?
It varies in range anywhere between $60 and $100 to do that service.
The only way he could ruin the car was if he broke the hose off going into the throttle.
Right.
That would create,
that's my
that
standard
would, that
procedure.
Would create more problems, yeah. Be careful with that big rubber. Looks like the Lost in Space robot's arms.
You know. Yeah. It's like an accordion-style hose.
Accordion-style hose, yeah. Be careful with that.
All right, Chris, thanks, man. You got a follow-up question, or are you good for now?
I appreciate it. No, that helps a lot. Thanks so much.
Thanks for calling in.
And that, boys and girls, is how it works. Chris, with our first question, I see the phone ringing again right now. Again, Kristen's out there, 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Our guests today, Steve Bullock and Rusty Simpre, over 4 decades worth of experience between them, and they are both currently from Price Automotive. Doesn't matter whether your question is about a domestic or an imported car. Dial them up. Steve, real quick. I've been asked this question several times. Handful of people say, ask them this. Synthetic motor oils, worth the extra price or not?
I'm using it now because it does have more lubricating properties to it. You can go a little bit further in mileage on it. I'm not saying that, you know, you do what they say. You can go 7,500, 15,000 miles on it. I generally drive mine 5,000 miles on it versus the 3,000 on, you know, regular oil. But the reason I've started doing it more than anything else is that regular oil costs almost as much as a synthetic now.
Yes, it does.
I can buy Mobil 1 in a 5-quart bottle from Walmart for $25, and I can buy 5 quarts of regular oil in whatever grade and from whoever.
$20.
So you spend an extra $5 and you get the extra lubricating properties to it. There's definitely benefits to it. But it's like I say, that you still have to change the oil. You can't just put it in there and say, okay, I'm good for 7,500 or 15,000 miles like some of them are saying. There's just no way to do that driving around here. I guess if you drove in someplace where it was dry, and it was flat and you were doing nothing but highway driving, sure, give it a whirl. But you do still have to check the oil to make sure there's plenty in there. But around here, I wouldn't recommend anything over 5,000 miles.
I'm kind of a believer now as well, because even General Motors just switched to, what's that stuff called?
It's called Dexos.
It's a synthetic blend. Yeah.
And, this stuff, what little experience I have with it right now is
all
that
2010
and up. 2010 and up.
2010 and up automobiles, GM uses Dexos oil.
And they are even saying, I believe, and don't hold me to this, I believe what they told me was is that even the Corvettes can switch to it rather than using the Mobil 1 to save money.
That's pretty neat.
I believe that's correct.
Don't them Corvettes hold a whole lot of oil?
They hold between 6 and 7 quarts.
Okay.
Good Lord. All right, we got another call. I'll come back because I have a follow-up about the synthetic. Leroy. Hey, Leroy.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, baby?
I'm all right. You got a question for
Rusty? Tell you what, another thing is good for that is put it in the radiator. It's called graphite. Russia should know that. You can put it in the radiator and have the car right off. Fuel injection off. I'm a race car driver. They not build, rebuild them. So I know.
Really?
Yeah, I got 2 race cars. A Mustang and a 63 Ford Fastback.
So you just pour that in the radiator?
Yeah, quiet graphite.
That's a new one to me.
That's a new one to me.
I got you, April Fool's late.
April Fool's.
It's April 17th, man.
Okay, Ross, I hear you, baby.
All right, Leroy. Right. Love you, man.
Love y'all, too.
Thanks,
see you,
man.
Graphite now.
All right.
You never heard of it. I did it in a race car.
That's great.
Yeah, baby.
All right, man. Thanks, Leroy.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. We already got a joke played on us, and we're not even 10 minutes into the program. Dial us up with your question, your comment, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Rusty Sempre, Steve Bullock, both from Price Automotive, answering your questions about cars, problems, mobile, we were talking a minute ago about synthetic motor oils, whether or not what those guys think about the pros and cons of that. WNRN Studio, you can also send me a question online. And the phone's ringing again. The local number, don't forget, we do have the toll-free number, 1-877-967-6762. For those who like the alphabet, that's 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Guys, we were talking about the synthetic motor oil a minute ago. Steve, you said that you're only going to do it for 5,000 miles?
Yeah, that's all I do, and it's mainly because of the driving around here. I mean, it's you get every, I guess, every climate condition you can imagine around here. And you got hills, you got, you know, traffic. You know, I don't trust it past that. And that's just my personal
check
preference.
Your owner's manual. They've always had severe driving conditions and normal driving conditions.
What if I take my car to Price Automotive? Can I, for its, you know, checkup, can I ask for synthetic motor oil? Is that an option for
yes,
me?
Yes, you can.
You can even ask for the Dexos. We have it on the line.
But
all right, we got a call from Ben. Hey, Ben.
How you doing?
Hey, question for these guys.
Yeah, I have a 1999 Chevy Silverado.
All right.
And I've noticed when I turn left, I'm hearing like a kind of a, not really a grinding, like maybe a rubbing noise, like a... It's only when I turn left, like going around a turn. And I've recently changed my brakes. I do all my brake work and stuff myself. And I was thinking maybe it was maybe the bearing or something.
It could be, but did you change the rotors by any chance or have them machined or anything?
Yeah, I changed, probably September, I changed the rotors and the brakes all the way around it.
Okay.
Could be simple as the backing plate.
Yeah, the backing plate on those things, sometimes it could be touching the rotor.
Just that thin metal plate. We're directly behind the brake rotor in towards the engine side.
And I think it's coming out of the front end.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
It could be something as simple as that.
It only happens
when
I turn left.
That'd be one of those things where you even want to take a look and see whether or not the tire could be rubbing something as well. Because you never know if the inner fender might have a piece that's come loose on it.
Okay.
It'd be closer to the back side of the inner fender.
I've had some mud flaps rub tires before on the Isuzus where you take just whatever direction you turn, and mud flap, if it's not secure, it'll rub against the tire. But
okay.
The sound you were making sounds like a backing
right,
plate.
Well, thank you.
All right.
And I was just hoping it wasn't a bearing.
Not a bad idea to jack it up and grab the wheel to top and bottom and make sure there's no play in it.
Because they don't always make, you know, a normal grinding style noise either. When, like, driving down the road, sometimes
you
got to
load them,
noise.
Put the weight on one side or the other before the noise will come and go. So.
And they usually
sound...
Yeah,
I hadn't noticed it during the winter because my windows are always up. And I just recently started noticing this spring when the windows are down and you're driving and you hear it. It's kind of alarming a little bit. I'm a little concerned about it since I just changed everything on it.
Right. Yeah, like I say, that'd be one of those things. It could be something really, really simple, but at least jack up, you know, both front wheels by the control arm and grab the wheel at 12 and 6 and give it a good shake. If you've got any play in there, there's something wrong.
Okay.
All right?
All right, man. Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Ben.
Yep. Bye-bye.
All right. Dial us up, 979-0919. That is open. Our guests today, Steve Bullock and Rusty Sempre from Price Automotive. Take your calls. I also want to take a moment to thank Dixon Disposal. Dixon reminds you that you can reduce household garbage by purchasing products with reuse and recycling in mind. Small changes in your lifestyle can keep our planet green for years to come. When Dixon's picks up your trash, they sort and separate it for recycling. You can help the planet stay green with curbside service from Dixon Disposal at your home or business, 978-2111 or DixonDisposal.com. All right, phone lines are ringing. Got the local line going right now. Kristen will get that. And let me grab the phone line for Larry from Bedford. Hey, Larry.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm well. You got a question for these gentlemen.
Yes, first of all, I want to thank you for your show. I really enjoy it. I have a 92 Buick Roadmaster. It's a 350 engine. I've had problems. Occasionally, it won't start, and on one occasion, going down the road, it just cut off, loss of power. So I replaced the coil wire, the pickup in the distributor, and the harness that goes from the bottom of the distributor into the coil. And I never saw anything really wrong. So this morning I went out to start it. It wouldn't start again. So I unplugged the harness to the distributor from the coil, plugged it back up, and it started. And that's not the first time. I'm wondering, it appears that maybe there's something wrong inside the distributor. I'm at a loss.
It's a 92, you said?
Yes.
All right. That thing, did you replace the module inside the distributor?
I call it the pickup.
Yeah, well, it's like a seven-wire module is what that thing is.
Yeah, yeah.
That still has a pickup coil, too, below it, doesn't it?
It's got like a magnetic pickup that's in the center of that thing. What you need to do.
What I did was the flat horseshoe-type pickup I'm talking about.
Yeah, that's called a module.
Okay, module. I did replace
the
that.
The pickup.
The only thing I replaced inside the distributor.
Okay. Underneath your rotor button, there's a cylinder there. Now, that's your pickup. What you need to do is take off the rotor button and take a flashlight and shine down in there and see if the magnet that's all the way around that thing, it should be one piece, see if it's cracked up. If it's cracked up...
Is that like the star wheel thing?
Yeah.
It's like a speed sensor looking thing with little points on it.
Yeah, you remember those things.
Yeah.
I mean, they had them in the... We used to have trouble with
those
things.
We always called them a pole piece.
That's exactly what it's called.
Yeah.
But it's pretty much... It's a magnetic pickup.
Or pole piece is what they call that. Yeah.
Can you physically take it out with a pair of pliers or something?
No, you put a distributor in it. That's the quickest and simplest thing to do. Just mark where everything is and just put a distributor in it. It's used to do it all the time back in the mid-90s.
The wires used to get real dry-rotted and brittle, too, and the wires would kind of crack open, too, and cause bad connection down under there, too.
Well, you know, I was curious when I unplugged that bottom plug-in and it starts. Would that somehow affect it? Does that rejuvenate it or something?
It's probably because of all the rain we had yesterday, and it just got moisture in there and lost a little connection.
But I said, just take the cap off.
I was afraid of that, but thank you very much for your advice. I appreciate it.
All right, good luck.
Good luck. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
All right, we are having our little auto chat with our guests today, Steve Bullock, Rusty Simpre from Price Automotive. Dial us up. The toll-free line is open, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Send me an instant message, WNRNstudio@AOL.com. Or dial us on the local line once it's free, because right now we have Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Morning.
Hey, I have a couple of questions, if you'll allow me. I have a 95 Dodge Ram, and I've been having some troubles recently when it rains with starting up. A couple of days ago, it wouldn't turn over anymore. I replaced the starter motor, and it was working fine. And then yesterday, with all the rain, I couldn't get it to start. I replaced the plugs, and it started up, but I don't know. It's running fine now, but I don't know whether it was because the rain had stopped and it had just dried out enough. So I guess my question is there anything else I should look at? What should I look at next if I have problems when it rains again?
Plug wires. I put plug wires, cap, and rotor button on it if it's got a distributor cap. If it's got just coil, 95...
It's got a distributor.
95.
Yeah, it's got a distributor in it. I'd put the whole secondary ignition on, which is going to consist of your cap, rotor, and wires. You've already put the plugs in it, so you don't need to do that. Because what will happen is that the plug wires, when they get damp, if they've got any kind of leaks is what they're called, but they're arcing off of each other, the actual spark never gets to the plug.
Secondary ignition leak.
Yeah.
Do they still make the stuff you can spray on the cap and wires and stuff to seal it, help? Remember that back in the day?
I
haven't seen it.
Time.
It was back in the 70s and early
80s. But I can tell you
80s,
how you can find it. If it's running good right now, all you got to do is have a little spray bottle.
Water hose.
Fill it with water and just spray it on the ignition wires. And if they're bad, it's going to kill it. It'll turn it right off.
Right. Okay.
And that will be the quickest and easiest way I can tell you to check.
Or at nighttime, you'll see the spark jumping off the wires at nighttime if you missed it down with some water.
Mm-hmm.
You'll see where your spark's
going. It'll look
like
a little thunderstorm going on down there.
Yes, it will.
Right.
Make sure you don't have any gas leaks.
Yeah, make sure you're not too close
either. Could I bother you for one more,
sure.
one more question?
Be quick.
I have an issue with just my fan and heating system, and in the summertime with the fan off and the heat turned down on the thermostat dial, the dial,
right,
I still get heat coming out through the vents. Is there a relay or anything that
probably what you're feeling is the fresh air vent, because even though you've got the heat off, you're still going to get some fresh air coming through the venting system. I mean, it's just the way they're designed. And that air is going to blow across the heater core. And if there's any kind of leaks inside, it's going to come inside the vehicle. Like, they put, like, felt and stuff around all the doors to try and keep every system sealed. But, you know, like anything with age, that stuff will wear out and gets dry rot.
And another question for you, has the stereo been replaced?
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Because it's some of these doors that are in your heater case operate off cables, and usually when somebody replaces the stereo, they have to take the heater unit out to get to, and that's the first thing they do is just yank on the cables and knock those all out of adjustment, which would let some heat blend in too. You got a door in there that's supposed to close off the heat and let the cool in, or close off the cool and let the heat in. And if there's cables out of adjustment or any leak at all, you're still going to get a little warm air. So.
Last fall, I flushed the heater core because I wasn't able to get heat at all, and had heat all winter. But now
you can't turn
warm,
it off.
I'm gonna fry it.
Yeah. You got it working now,
Chris. Thanks, man.
All right, appreciate your help.
Thank you,
sir. All right, 11:22 on the wake up call.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley, wind advisory until 8 p.m. through Charlottesville and the Valley. Mostly sunny and windy with a 20% chance of morning showers in the Valley today. Highs in the upper 60s, lower 70s in Richmond. Wind 15 to 25 miles per hour and gusts up to 45. Mostly cloudy and windy tonight. Lows in the mid-40s. Partly cloudy and windy tomorrow. Highs 70 to 75. Right now in the Valley, it's fair and 51, 53 in Lynchburg, 58 in Richmond, 56 in Charlottesville. And let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Graphics for allowing us to be on the air. You can find them at Meade Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, providing custom T-shirts and sportswear plus promotional items for schools, organizations, and businesses. Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746. Online, it's brgtshirts.com. All right, back in action with our guests, Rusty and Steve from Price Automotive. And we have another Chris on the line. Hey, Chris.
How you doing?
All right, thanks for waiting. And your question for the guys.
I've got a 98 Escort, and the other day when I tried to put gas in it, it basically wouldn't take it. It sort of started puking it out. You can get maybe a tenth of a gallon in at a time. And even trying to put it in like manually with a gas can, if you start the flow going too fast, it overflows.
And that's got that baffle in it, doesn't it? Or it's like a check valve.
Still got the EVAP system too back there with the vent valve and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure. You sure? Has the gauge been working okay? You sure it needs gas? Because they had a lot of fuel gauge issues as well.
Chris, did you hear that? They're asking if you're
100% sure.
Right, 100% sure that
close
it needs
to empty.
Gas.
I'm sorry?
Has it got plenty? Are you sure it needs gas completely?
Is the gauge working
yeah, I mean,
right?
It was darn near empty
okay.
when I was trying to
okay.
put gas in it. And I mean, the first time it happened, I thought, okay, maybe it's the gas pump. But then I was at a different gas station the next day, and same thing. I mean, it took me probably 3-4 minutes to get, 2 gallons in it.
I just put a charcoal canister on 2 weeks ago on an accent. Same thing. Every time you squeeze the handle, click, 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 spitting back. So the canister had actually broken apart.
Did it throw
apart.
A check engine light?
No. Okay. It wouldn't run the evap test, but the code was in there that for a vent problem. But, yeah, the canister just totally come apart and it was clogging up the fresh air side coming in. But
I'm trying to think of where the canister is on that car because I think it's still underneath the car.
It's under there, 98, yeah. The thing to do is just pull hoses off of it and see if you can fill it with gas in, is what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but you want to pull the right hose.
We're talking amongst each other. We don't mean to ignore
to
you, Chris.
You. We're
calculating here.
It's amazing to watch it, Chris.
Okay.
The burning smoke smell in here from the brains functioning is amazing.
It sounds like what's going on is it's one of two problems. It's probably that the vent is not venting off. These things have what's called an evap system, and all this thing does is it puts a vacuum on the tank.
Well, it also allows fresh air to come into the fuel tank to vent it so you can force gas down through that nozzle.
But what I was getting to is the whole purpose of this thing is just for emissions to keep the gas fumes
leaking into the atmosphere.
Well, like what he was just telling you, they have vent valves on them. If the vent valve sticks or is broken or a spider has climbed up in there and made a nest, which is entirely possible.
A hose could be collapsed.
Exactly. Any of these things. What you're getting is that the system is full of fumes, and when you start pumping the gas in there, all those fumes are trying to push back up to where you're filling it because it's not allowing this stuff to vent. I'm not as familiar with that system, but you would be able to pull off a vacuum hose or the
not
hose.
A vacuum hose.
It should be a hose.
A box at the back of the car somewhere that's got a couple half-inch hoses going to it.
And I think, I want to say it's up underneath the rear fender. I want to say it's there where the gas filler neck is. But I don't hold me to that, partner.
The last Ford I worked on with the evap problem was Jim Slaughter's son's. I forget what kind of Ford it is. It was right in the middle, like where the spare tire is in the trunk. It was directly below that, and they put a shield over top of it. But not sure on the Escort.
Okay.
But that's what it's doing. It's not venting for some reason. Either the charcoal canister, which is part of the system, too, is, like I say, I had one a couple weeks ago that broke apart and clogged all the hoses up.
It's a silly question from a guy.
Hose could just be collapsed or
from a guy who
vent
knows,
valve.
Well, I know nothing about cars, but can you stand there with something... a twig, and hold the little cap that you know you have to put the gas nozzle has to break open that cap and let fumes out that way?
No, where this thing is stopped up is actually on the tank itself.
Yeah, the tank itself has to be vented to allow fuel to go into it when it gets down there, or it all just creates a big bubbly mess.
All right, Chris, thanks for the call, man. These guys are going to get an answer later in the day, and maybe we'll put that on the podcast. Listen to the podcast, SeavillePodcast.com, and if they come up with the full, you know, response, we're like, oh, yes, I wish I'd remembered this when Chris called in, we'll put it in the comments area.
All right, I'll check that out.
All right, man. Thanks.
Good luck.
All right, 1128 here with Rusty Simpre and Steve Bullock from Price Automotive. Dial up. Phone lines are ready to go, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. You can also send us the instant message question, WNRNstudio@AOL.com. Here's a question that came over. Didn't we have a question earlier about a Chevy Silverado?
Mm-hmm.
2001 Chevy Silverado, 1500 extended cab. What does it say? V8. My own handwriting. Replace the water pump at $85,000 and again at $143,000. Doesn't this seem early and often?
If you're replacing it because of coolant leaks, chances are it's not the water pump itself that's leaking unless it's leaking at the upper radiator hose neck. They had a problem with that, but if they're leaking at the back of the block, they had a problem with the gaskets, and that's usually the gaskets wear out.
Intake?
The intake is waterless on that one.
Okay.
That's just got that little bypass tube that goes over the top. It sounds like it's probably the gaskets behind it. That is a little premature, but like I say, the upper portion, the upper radiator hose neck off the water pump used to leak around that seal up there because it's just pressed in. Those are the only two things I can think of right off the bat that would possibly be leaking. But if it's leaking out of like a weep hole, that's where the pulley is, you know. It's hard to say.
could be aftermarket pump, and one of those get what you pay for kind of deals.
And the coolant could be off a little, and you might have more alkaline in it. Could be possibly eating things.
Do those have those quick disconnect connectors for the heater pipes and all that too on that?
That
used to leak. I know I had to put one on my van.
Yes, that one does. I'm pretty sure it does up there by the firewall.
All right, Ron.
Recommendations, just take a hose and wash everything off, let it dry, and then just get some pressure on it and see exactly where the leak starts at. And that's about all we can come up with on that
one. Write me back if you got a follow-up to that, or call in 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. Got a call? Let's see. We got Melinda from Troy. Hello, Melinda.
Hi.
Question?
Yes, I have a 99 Lincoln Continental, and I'll look outside at night sometimes, and my interior lights are on, and they go on and off by themselves and run my battery down sometimes.
Squirrels.
Okay.
That's got that that theater lighting module in it, too, doesn't it?
Lincolns have every kind of module known to man. Is your driveway flat, or are you on a kind of a angle or hill or anything?
Melinda, I don't know if you heard that. I want to know if your driveway of where you park is flat, or if you're parking it on a hill of some sort.
There's a slight grade.
Because body flex and door jam switches, they disagree. I mean, we've had some, vehicles like that, the frames flex, the body flexes just enough to make that door jam switch not get a good connection.
But it could also be that the module itself is bad.
Lincolns were famous for that automatic headlight, all that stuff used to give lots of trouble. And
back in the early days.
Early days.
What year is your car, Melinda?
99 Lincoln.
It's a 99. And it does have some other electrical issues, like the speedometer and all is all electrical, and it flashes on and off sometimes.
Yeah, you've got probably quite a few electrical issues going on, it sounds like.
I would, in the meantime, try to locate the fuse that works your dome lights and just yank that out during the night and stick it back in the morning. I mean, just to save your battery.
That would save the battery.
But I know that fuse probably powers about 7 or 8 other different things as well.
Just the main thing is so I don't have to jump start my car every time the lights stay on at night.
Yeah, that'd be about the only thing I could think of right offhand, is like Rusty said, taking the fuse out. But it could be, like I say, the fuse could power several different things. I don't think it's part of the security module in that thing.
No.
It wouldn't surprise me if there was a relay somewhere as well. Ford loves relays, and Ford has connector issues.
Best wishes.
All that stuff was on the timer, too, for when you get out the car, the headlights stay on, all that stuff.
And I'm telling you to watch out for squirrels. Squirrels screw with my car all the time.
Yes. They love the taste of wires.
All right. Bye.
All right. Bye.
All right. 11:33 on the wake-up call. Dial us up with your question for our auto technicians, I guess is the proper phrase now. Everything is about computer chips in there now, isn't it? And sensors and...
Don't even get me started.
You wouldn't believe it.
All right. Let me thank Ben Around Tattoos for their support. You can find them in Charlottesville and downtown Waynesboro, featuring male and female tattoo artists. Ben Around Tattoos has thousands of designs available, plus they can create work from a design that you provide. Ben Around Tattoos, downtown Waynesboro and Charlottesville at 701 West Main Street. For more information, find them online, benaroundtattoos.com. I see the local line is blinking. Quick question. Lazarus is with us today. Lazarus has a friend who's been checking out the Honda Fit because it has a low back area for the dogs to hop in and out of. Any suggestions? Maybe not about the Honda because I realize you guys are from Price Automotive, but any cars out there that you know of that have low rear entry?
There aren't many wagons left anymore.
We have the Elantra Touring, but I've never taken a tape measure to see how high it is. But I'm pretty sure it's got to be close to whatever the Honda is that your friend is looking at, because all that stuff comes into play when they do their crash tests and stuff. That bumper and rear deck's got to be a certain amount off the ground.
Really?
Yes.
Why is that?
Because you got front end crash, side crash.
Oh, so somebody, when they hit you from the rear,
back,
they hit the bumper,
yeah,
not the
bumper,
right,
not the
not
glass.
The door.
Yeah. So.
Or make the door.
I'm pretty
open.
Sure all that stuff has federal guidelines it has to meet until kids start chopping the springs and dropping them on the ground, and then you.
All right. Here's a question from someone who didn't want to come on air. Let me see if I can get this right. 2001 Nissan Altima is losing fluid. Has to put about 16 ounces of fluid in the radiator every month. Wants to know why it might be losing fluid.
It could be a couple different things. If you're not seeing anything on the ground,
start looking in the oil pan.
Well, you could look in your oil. Potentially a heater core is leaking, or you have it leaking internally into the combustion chamber, which would be like a head gasket, cracked cylinder head, cracked block, anything like that.
16 ounces how often?
Not once a month.
Once a month, according to this. 16 ounces of fluid in the radiator every month. But it doesn't say whether you guys asked if it was on the ground or not. Or
that's a pretty slow leak. I mean, that's going to be hard to.
It could be. It
really
could even be just a hose leak too, because just depending on what style clamps they use, if it's got the squeeze style clamps, they've been known to leak once they get a little bit of age on them, and because a coolant will actually kind of, depending on which coolant it is, if it's that red stuff, sometimes that stuff will actually build up like a crust.
Yeah.
And
well,
actually,
the green stuff does it too on the Hyundais, but
yeah. But you know,
just you need to, like I say, clean everything off and get a good flashlight and just go out and start. They usually leak when they're cold. Once they get hot, they'll stop leaking. So
yeah, I mean, what do you do? Do you
go over all the hoses first and wiggle them around and look?
The other option is to take it to a repair shop you trust and let them pressure test
as
well.
Pressure test it.
Because, I mean, that's the easiest way to tell. If you don't see anything external at that point after you clean it all off and put a pressure test on it, that's where you start digging a little bit deeper.
Put like a big, thick cardboard box, you know, lay it flat underneath of it and see
you can
where,
do that.
Where,
good
where
idea.
The drip
yeah,
is coming from.
Yeah, that's a lot of times that's the quickest way to find anything because it's hard to find a clean space where you park unless you're, you know, in a garage. Because a lot of places, you know, where you know people live, I know I live where I live at, I've got a gravel driveway. You can't tell if something's driven on the car or not. You know, like I say, if you live in apartments and stuff like that, everybody's driving stuff and everything's got a leak of some sorts at some time. And sometimes that's hard to find, and the best thing is what you just suggested, a piece of cardboard underneath the car.
Yep, get it clean and just good light, look around your hoses. But my experience with Nissans, they leak more oil than they leak coolant.
Yeah.
I guarantee the cardboard's going to show up something. But good job, Rick.
That's my contribution to today's suggestions about how to fix your car. 11:37 on the wake-up call, talking about cars, having a little auto chat. Steve Bullock, Rusty Simpre from Price Automotive, over four decades of experience in working and repairing cars. Make your question important to you. Dial us up 979-0919-877-WNR-N-ROCKS 1138. Here's a question that came through. I have an old Crown Victoria. The truck won't shut without a massive slam. I'm a mediocre repair guy. Should I take this on myself? And if so, where do I start?
If the Crown Vic's had a, they had a daggone assist unit back here. You remember that thing?
I don't remember it on the Crown Vic's.
I know they had it on some of them. On some of the higher end Crown Vic's, they had like a, where the lock assembly is like it had like kind of an assist thing where all you had to do is just close the trunk and let it go and it would actually pull it down.
The electric motor turns on and sucks the trunk down the rest of the way.
If it doesn't have that, it could be just as simple as it needs to be adjusted. I mean, it should have like two or three set screws on that lock cylinder assembly or on the latch assembly. You'd have to find out which side is adjustable and you just would be a matter of adjusting it closer to the latch. And that should help you. And then some cases, the latch itself, where the hook that, you know, actually the latch goes through, sometimes they're worn so far, they won't do anything unless you slam them. You used to see it a lot on the older cars.
But
all right, yeah, dial us up with your question.
Simple lubrication or just, like you said, adjust it, get it properly adjusted.
So. All right, hope that helps. 979-0919-1877-WNRN-ROCKS. That was up your question for Rusty or Steve.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, the Thomas Jefferson Center for the Protection of Free Expression hands out the Muzzle Award to recognize businesses or individuals who've trampled the First Amendment. But does labeling censorship actually do anything to end it? George Shugley's preliminary hearing took place this week with two witnesses contradicting his alibi. Read all about it in the Hook. And should interstate detours get the assistance of police directing traffic? I think those folks on 250 earlier this week have something to say about that. The Hook, always an adventure. And let's thank Sugar Snap for allowing us to be on air today. They offer gently used baby and kids items, including hats and nursing pillows, plus maternity clothes. Also at Sugar Snap, you'll find cloth diapers, nursery gear, and locally made items. They have a kid-friendly play area, and you can become a fan of Sugar Snap on Facebook or Twitter. More online at sugarsnapconsignment.com. And it is 11:40. That means Drew Thompson will be here at noon for Les Temps Perdue. Just 20 more minutes. Best of 80s and 90s alternative bands such as Simple Minds, Edie Brickell, and R.E.M. Brought to you in part by Orzo and The Visualite. Requests are always welcome with Drew on Les Temps Perdue. All right, let me push all the proper buttons. And as some people will say, I love pushing your buttons. We have Don. Hey, Don.
Hey, how you doing? I got a tough question for you. Got a 88 Jeep Comanche Eliminator pickup, 406 cylinder in it. It's my son's truck. Just quit running the other day to shut off. It's getting fuel to the fuel rail. It is a fuel-injected truck. Fuel to the fuel rails, and it is getting fire to the plugs. My thought is, for some reason, the injectors are not working, and do you know electronically what controls the injectors? Computer problem, or some sensor or solenoid problem.
Crank sensor down on the bell housing.
Left-hand side.
Yep. Put tons of them in. That's what controls the injector fire.
Crankshaft position sensor. Should be one plug and one bolt.
Crankshaft position sensor?
Uh-huh. Yep. It reads off the flywheel.
Yeah.
And what happens is that the signal on the thing, if it gets broken down, it's not going to tell any. It's not going to work.
It'll fire the plugs, but not at the right time.
And it also it won't fire the injectors.
Oh, that's true too.
That's the easiest thing to check right there.
So just put another crankshaft position sensor in.
Yeah, it was a pretty common problem back then.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
All right.
Thank
good
you.
Luck.
All right. I like that. Smooth, simple. Dig in. It's like everybody comes together with a quick and easy answer. Your turn, folks. Somebody else. Local number is 979-0919, and that is free and available. The toll-free number has been used as well today, and your turn to use it. 877-WNRN-ROCKS. Gentlemen, I have a question from a friend who is thinking about purchasing a new car and selling or trading in their old one, and she wanted to know what was the best thing to do to prep a car for resale or trade in. I mean, other than just, I guess the simple thing is to do to get all the junk out of it and vacuum it, but you know, what else?
Service records, getting that stuff together really helps. You know, if they put those little menus and little charts in the back of your owner's manual, if all that's filled out correctly, that helps. Or if you at least have receipts from oil changes with, you know, documented mileage. A brand new inspection sticker always looks good on the vehicle as well. That means it's safe for highway operation and just as clean and clean and clean as you can get it. But
when you talk about the, and I already forgot the phrase you used, the little menu in the back of the
service records.
Service record. When I take my car to Price Automotive.
No, we don't. You have to ask to get that filled out.
I have to ask that.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's
well,
okay.
We have the records
but
in the computer.
That's what I want to know.
Everything's in the computer, and we have a file upstairs with your number on it.
So when I take mine in, my menu may not be filled out, but I can ask for, can you print all my service records every time I've taken
Good call, Richard. Good call.
So it may not be handwritten in the back of the employee, but I can get it printed out computer-wise and staple it in or
there
fold
it
in.
Every 3,000 miles, here's my service record. Good job.
Which is the thing to do, by the way, as my my Hyundai, you know, and I don't know that I've told this story yet, but I had an accident back in January, and my Hyundai from Price Hyundai, which does underwrite on this station, saved me. I walked away from an accident that totaled two cars and damaged a third with not a bruise. And I attribute that to my price-purchased Hyundai Sonata. I had my airbag.
Six airbags and ABS brakes,
and
just
my,
like the answer.
And my, was wearing my safety belt, my seat belt. Nothing. No damage to myself. Thank you very much, Hyundai and Jim Price Hyundai.
We aim to please.
And I believe that my personally requested mechanic was Rusty Simpre, so he must have been doing something right. I see that somebody's on the toll-free line. We'll get that in a second. That means that the local line is available, 979-0919. Simple question, guys, because that's all I'm good for. Warmer weather's coming up. When we've done this show in the past, it's what to do to prep your car for winter weather. What do I do now that warmer weather's coming up?
About pretty much the same thing. It's really no different between seasons. I mean, you still want to make sure that you check, you know, check your oil, check coolant. You want to make sure all these things, you know, transmission fluid, you know, all the fluids in the cars really need to be checked. We're coming off of winter gas and starting to use the summer gas. I mean, they change the mix of the fuels in between the seasons. I mean, one thing to check if you, you know, complain about poor fuel economy, that can be some of it. The other thing is, too, is that fuel isn't, I don't want to pick on it too much. Fuel
I do.
It isn't.
I'm angry about it.
It's not the quality it used to be.
And they're increasing the ethanol rating now, too. 15%.
The ethanol went up.
Yes.
Right. And so you're going to see more fuel economy degrade. The other thing I've noticed, too, is in changing what fuel filters on what cars still have fuel filters, you're seeing a lot more crap. I mean, it's just, it looks like dirt. And it just, it's one of these things where fuel systems need to be serviced on a regular basis, whether you're putting a store-bought injection cleaner in it, which if you do that, you're going to have to, I would recommend that you do it more often than if you use something, say, from a repair shop or a dealership. The products we use are pretty much their high-grade products that can only be bought through us. The stuff works, and you want to keep your injectors as clean as possible because the cleaner the spray is of the fuel, the more fuel efficiency you can gain. The other thing is, too, is that all that crap that's in the fuel does get on top of pistons. It gets in the valves.
Additives.
You know, all these things they put in there. It's not a bad idea to do a thing about every 15 to 30,000 miles. They call it an upper intake or plenum cleaning, and what this does is that cleans as much of that crap out of there as you possibly can. And the less, you know, carbon buildup or whatever that stuff is anymore is built up in there, that stuff actually absorbs fuel as you're going down, as it's going through with all the intake runners and everything like that.
And it will affect your gas mileage.
Yes.
Because the carboned up engine, like you said, the carbon absorbs fuel, therefore there's less there for the cylinder to burn.
So
you're actually wasting fuel. So a clean engine is a happy engine. Make sure your antifreeze boiling point's good. Tires, because a lot of people travel,
right,
you know, on vacation in the summertime. Get your tires looked at, alignment. All this stuff affects fuel mileage. They're talking, well, you know gas. They're talking $4 a gallon by what, June?
I read just this weekend where it's already over $4 in Washington, D.C.
That's
and
right,
five
yeah.
other states.
That's right. So we're next. So
it's coming. I mean, anything, and like I say, tire pressures, I know that, you know, for years and years and years, they've said go by what the door says on cars. I will tell you like this. I'm running my tires at what the tire manufacturer says, and I'm getting better fuel economy. Don't exceed that pressure because you're taking your own, it's all your own risk at that point. But the harder a tire is and the faster it can, or the easier it rolls, the less effort the car has to make to move.
Yeah. The recommended tire pressure, I think they set that just so that the manufacturer can pass their ABS brake test, because all that stuff is government mandated as well. The car has to stop within a certain amount of feet, and if their tires are a little bit overinflated, that could change that number. So they set it to where, I mean, it may make the car a little safer and stop a little faster, but there's a lot that goes into tire pressure alone. So just, if you're a good, safe, careful driver, it's not going to hurt to crank them up a couple more pounds and help your gas mileage. So.
But like I say, don't exceed what the tire says.
Right.
I just want to be clear on that.
We saw some Suzy Rodeos, you know, that's a, what, at least a 3,500-pound vehicle.
Easily.
And they want 26 pounds of air in the tires
right.
for some reason. And you go around curves and you can just hear them squealing and dragging on the road. absolutely ridiculous. But.
All right, I see the local line is blinking or dialing in. Don't forget the toll-free line's available. Here's a call from a minute ago, an anonymous dialer. 2001 Chrysler Setting. Is that the proper?
It's probably Sebring.
Sebring.
All right, I'm reading other handwriting, and I can barely read that. Thought the sunroof was leaking and took it off, but the barrier runs down. The water still drains down and comes up where the pedals by the driver's side. Only plate water comes down, can go to, anyway. Where are the liquids coming from if the water is coming down by the pedals on the driver's side?
I would have to say it's probably around the windshield. It's either going to be the windshield or down through the
unless
heating,
there's some the moldings in the
vent.
Moldings in the roof, the heater case isn't going to get, well.
I mean, if the runners are
by
open,
the pedals, like not the emergency brake pedal, but the gas pedal? Or
again,
you just
I'm
pedals,
reading right? some handwriting, but the water drains down and comes up where the pedals by the driver's side only. Only place water comes down.
If that's when it's draining out of the sunroof, it's possible that the drain
can go up to an inch. Go up to an inch.
Yeah, that's a pretty substantial leak.
If it's by the gas pedal, it's got to be getting in the cowl panel outside and coming around the firewall through the heater case somewhere.
It could do that, or it could even be that you have a leak in the sunroof hose that goes down the pillar.
They go down the pillars. That's on the left side.
But it doesn't, no.
I'm thinking he's talking about a gas pedal.
Yeah, but what I'm trying to tell you is that when it goes through the pillar, it's up by the windshield. It can trace down through the windshield. I've seen this before. It drove me crazy.
Okay.
Because we put a windshield in a car, and it didn't fix it.
It was a sunroof drain.
It was a sunroof drain was following that channel.
Wow.
It was, and it drained. It was a very bizarre thing.
There's an easy test. If you just open the sunroof, you'll see where the drains come into it. It's supposed to collect water around it, and there'll be a tube in each corner of that sunroof. Just get you a glass of water and pour into each corner of that sunroof with it open, and
water should
it
run
should
down
go down
in the corners
and not back up. If it backs up, then it stopped up somewhere, which is causing a leak.
And it should also exit in the corners of
where the tires
like the
are.
Doors are, or back by the tires on the rear. These things, a sunroof, you know, understand this. A sunroof is a hole in a car. There's no way to stop it from leaking. So what they do is they make it so it can drain as much water as it possibly can off. You know, I'll be honest with you. I hate sunroofs.
I do, too.
Because all they are trouble. Because either they break, and they'll always break where they're partially open. Or
they leak.
They leak. Yeah. And, you know, it's just like I say, when you have a sunroof car, you've got to seal off that leak first. And the way that I used to do them is I would get duct tape and I'd run it around the thing and get a garden hose and start looking. The other thing you can do, too, is get some, you know, soapy water, turn the car on recirculation and AC, and start spraying around everywhere you think there's a seam.
You're actually turning the blower fan on high, and that will pressurize the inside of the car.
Yeah, pressurize the inside of the car, and you can possibly find a leak that way. It can get extremely
time-consuming.
The bubble comes out inside? Is that what
it'll blow out on the outside.
Oh, I see.
Or you could use baby powder or some kind of powder to go around it, and you'll see it. If it's an air leak somewhere on that vehicle, it'll start pushing the bubbles through.
When you start looking for water leaks, it can become very time-consuming.
Very, very.
But. All right, 11:53 on the wake-up call as we talk about cars. Call in with your question if you have one. Please dial us up. We got about 6 minutes left. 979-0919 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. That's a toll-free number. Over 40 years of expertise in car repair with Steve Bullock and Rusty Simpre from Price Automotive. Let me take a moment and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for allowing us to be on air hosting the Great Spring Gear Swap. It's your chance to trade in gear and find gently used gear and apparel. You can find Blue Ridge Mountain Sports at Barracks Road Shopping Center, Charlottesville, Lexington Commons, and Chesterfield Town Center in Richmond, brms.com. All right, here's a call from someone else who didn't want to come on air. What is the gas called that people put in to help inflate their tires, and how much does it cost?
The nitrogen fill, I guess.
Nitrofill.
We are actually doing it at the dealer, and I believe I think there's several other places in Charlottesville that are doing it as well. I think
we're $38.95 or something like that.
It's right around $40. Honestly, I can't tell you that much about it. Because
I've read on it.
That's all I've done is read about it, and I haven't done any real research on it. Basically, the explanation that's given is that, you know, the nitrogen will not leak as fast as regular air.
Because nitrogen molecules are thicker and heavier than the oxygen molecules. Oxygen molecules, according to our pamphlets, are harmful for your tires, and they're smaller, therefore they leak out faster. So the nitrogen molecules will stay in there better, and it will not deteriorate the inside of your tires.
And it also, you know, like I say, anytime you can keep your tire pressure maintained, you know, at whatever level it's set at, it does help with fuel economy because, you know, when you're driving these cars, I mean, we check cars at every oil change. We adjust the tire pressure on every one. And, I mean, it's very, very seldom you'll get one that is at the level that it calls for. They're always off by 1 to 3 pounds. And this is supposed to keep it, it's supposed to maintain from what I've read of it.
Yeah. But not only that, with your $40 purchase of a nitro fill, you're getting a year's roadside assistance. All these nitro fills are registered on this website. You're getting a year roadside assistance and free test your pressures and adjust for like a year
really?
As well. Yeah, we got a little program going. Not meaning to plug
but
price.
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I do know
cool
there
deal.
Are several other places in Charlottesville that are doing this, and I believe... I want to say the first place I ever heard of it was at Bob's Wheel Alignment. That's what I want to say, but don't hold me to that either. But I do know a lot of tire stores are going to this as well.
But if you're interested, you don't have to go to Price Automotive.
No, you can check around.
There
I'm sure
places doing it.
Call. Just call around if you've got somebody that you want. You know that does this kind of work.
It takes like 10 minutes to do the whole deal. It's not a big ordeal, and it's supposed to be really good for your tires. So.
And it, like I say, the benefits to it, you know, from everything I'm reading, you know, they have a lot of benefits to it. I just don't know. I can't speak for it personally because I haven't used it yet.
I've never really seen, you know, compressed air damage the inside of a tire. That's my biggest question right there.
I think what they're talking about on that.
They say it breaks down the rubber.
I don't know about that. I can't honestly say anything about that. But I will tell you this. If you've got some shops that are out there, and I'm not going to, you know, try to down anybody, but some shops that change tires, they don't have their compressors hooked up to what they call a dryer or to any kind of water trap system, and sometimes you will see moisture inside a tire.
That's bad.
Now, that is bad because what it can do is it can actually tear a tire up.
And rust the wheel on the pieces,
and
too.
Corrosion. You know, and you get the corrosion in the aluminum. It can cause the sidewalls to leak. The beads to leak. There's a lot of different things that play into that. But a lot of your tire changers now, especially in the last, I guess, 15 years, they've got their own water trap system on them to keep that from happening. It's just that, you know, some places have older compressors and they don't have that stuff on there. And, I mean, it just, you can get moisture in a line unless it's checked regular.
It's more helpful, too, if you've got the tire monitor system on your car. With
right.
The little light that comes on, that won't be coming on as often. So,
all right. Let me take a moment here and remind you, this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg, 1158. On the wake-up call, Les Temps-Perdue is up in just a few moments. Our guests today, Rusty Simpre and Steve Bullock from Price Automotive, as we've been talking about cars and answering your questions, and even one or two of mine. Guys, this is probably the last one we'll get in. Someone wants to know how to get the information on recall if you're not the original owner.
Just call.
You should be able to call the dealer.
Call the dealer.
Yeah, but I mean, do you call? I mean,
you call the dealer. You give them your VIN number, your vehicle identification number.
If you don't hear about it, I mean, if
it's a good thing to check. Once a year, you should call the dealer and say, "Hey, are there any recalls on my car?"
And I believe there's even a website for that. I think some manufacturers do publish a website.
That's what I wanted to get into as well. I've had customers bring me like technical service bulletins, and when they want all this stuff on their car check, and they get it online somewhere. I know there's numerous chat rooms online too. You just like Google in problems with Ford Taurus or something, and there'll
be
a gazillion sites up there where you can go online and chat with people and figure out what they did to fix their car if you have a similar concern. But yeah, I'm sure there's. I know the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration has a website too that you could probably find out your recall.
So the day that you change your batteries and your smoke detector, you should also go online and check for any recalls for your car.
It's probably faster to just call the dealer. They have a computer. They put in your serial number, and yes, no, it's right there.
And the other thing is, too, is that we have heard recalls on the news before we've ever seen them.
Oh, yeah. No
doubt. I mean, just because you see it on, say, the Today Show or whatever – doesn't mean we know anything about it.
Yeah,
yeah, I think that's
they're
what
all
that, that
vehicle
question.
Identification number. They're all VIN number specific on the recalls because everything has production dates and build dates, and it's crazy.
Right,
but there are chat rooms. But
thank you so much. I appreciate you guys coming in. Got
no
some
problem,
good
Rick.
Questions
right.
today.
We'll do it again soon.
Yes, we will. We'll probably be back at the end of the year. And I thank you very much. Drew
thank
Thompson
you.
Up next with Les Thames Perdue.
This has been your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasoline, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at wakeupcall@WNRN.org. The Wake Up Call is produced by Sean McCord. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for The Wake Up Call, only on WNRN.